דקה, דקה.
His masterclass is on communication. And communication is really the backbone of our connection between spouses. How else do I express to you what's going on inside of me other than communication? There is things like body language and there's action, and those are different types of communication. But today we're going to be focused on the most common form of communication, which is verbal communication. How do I share with you my thoughts, my concerns, my feelings in a way that you can hear? And that's the title of today's class, which is Speak and Be Heard. Because so many times we speak and we're not heard. We may be physically heard, but the point that we're trying to make or the feeling that we're trying to share just doesn't come across. And that's sad, because oftentimes when we are speaking, especially to our partner, we have very important things to say, and we have things that are very meaningful to us and come from our heart. And we want that our partners should hear them and understand them and take them with the seriousness that we express them. And yet oftentimes that fails. Many times, not only do you not end up communicating to your partner, but what ends up happening is that your partner actually hears something different and can get upset, or they can get hurt, or they can get even angry. And then everything just kind of falls apart. And if anybody here has been married like me, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So how is it that, or why is it, let's focus on the why. Why is it that oftentimes our communication is not successful? Well, there are many, many reasons for that. And some of those reasons are because of your partner. Partner might not be a good listener, but let's not talk about that tonight, because that's not what we're here to discuss. But one of the primary reasons is because oftentimes we speak to our partners like we speak to ourselves, right? When I look in the mirror and I say, oh, wow, you really need to lose weight, right? So that works for me when I'm talking to myself, but that doesn't work when I say that to my partner. Or if I were to say other things like, I really should be more conscientious about paying the bills on time so I don't get fees, right? Again, that works when I say that to myself, but if I were to express it that way to my partner, it feels a little domineering, a little controlling, a little insensitive, and it can come up as very rude and actually have the opposite reaction. And you can just come up with a million examples of how you can talk to yourself in a certain way, but then when you share it with your partner the same way, right? What's the big deal? It just doesn't work. One of the reasons why it doesn't work is because when I speak to myself, I've already included all the compassion and love and understanding and sensitivity for myself because I'm me. But when I say those same words to my partner, they don't hear that I think they're really great, and I already know that they're so responsible, and I do think that they're absolutely beautiful, and I am really just concerned about their health and all these other things that are in my mind. But when I just say, hey, you know what, you could stand to lose a few pounds, or wow, those, you're sending out that bill pretty late, or gosh, you didn't show up on time, or something like that, it just doesn't work. Okay. That's the first reason. Another reason why oftentimes our communication to our partners fail is because we speak to our partners like we would an acquaintance, a friend, or a business associate, right? This also doesn't work, okay? Because when you're speaking to your friends, you could be casual, you could be serious, you can be joking around, you can be sarcastic, you can be angry, you can be confrontational. All these different ways that we speak to our friends are acceptable when we're speaking to friends or coworkers. I remember once I went to my father's office when I was a kid, and he used to work there with his brother. And so my uncle, and the first time I walked in, I heard them screaming at each other at a volume which I've never heard my dad scream at before. And I was thinking, oh, I didn't even recognize this person, right? If you were to come home and utilize that same method of speaking in our own home, he would have terrorized all of us. So, for instance, if you're out with your girlfriends and you're going to the mall and you say, oh, wow, there's a great place to park. Why don't you just park the car right there, right? All your girlfriends might look at you and say, wow, that's, you're being so helpful. That's terrific. Yeah, I'll just park my car there, right? If you do that to your husband, he doesn't see you as being helpful at all. He experiences that as controlling and distrustful and all these other things. So we can't speak to our partner like we speak to our friends or acquaintances. It just doesn't work. There's a lot of unspoken rules of acceptance, love, and respect that need to be employed when you, and I'm not saying you shouldn't speak that way to friends and acquaintances as well, but I think I made enough examples where you get my point. When you speak to your partner, there's many underlying tones that have to be addressed and be sensitive to in order for the same message to come across effectively. My wife once told me that if she's telling me something and she sees the tone, the literal color of my face change, she can immediately tell that I'm angry, upset, or disappointed, and it's very bothersome to her. I mean, just the color of my face, without even no facial gestures, no nothing. So I guess I realize I can't hide anything from her pretty much at all. And that brings me to another thing, you know, body language is a big part of why communication between partners fails as well. If you're impatient or not paying attention, or, you know, you get a scowl on your face, you know, then it's not gonna go over very well. This brings me to the third reason, which is actually the most important reason why communication between partners breaks down. And this is by far the most important reason. And this is really part of what it means, the definition of what I call relationship-oriented communication, which is what the method that I'm going to be sharing with you tonight is all about. Hello. Good. I can't really hear you, but...
Sorry to be late. Got home from work.
Good. Enjoy. So we're just talking about communication now, and specifically relationship-oriented communication. You're coming in at the best time. So the third reason why communication breaks down, and by far the most important reason why it falls apart, is because the crux of good communication between partners has everything to do with your mindset before you express yourself. Okay, it is known that 95% of the reaction from your partner is going to be based on your approach to the subject matter at hand. Not what you say, not even the tone of what you say, but your mindset and your approach to what you say. And what do I mean by that? When we communicate with our partner, the most important element that we need to take into consideration is, am I owning my own thoughts and my own feelings? This is the foundation of being able to express something in a healthy way to your partner. If when you share with your partner, you've already told yourself that my partner didn't make me feel any particular way, I am responsible for the way I am currently feeling about this. This is merely my interpretation of what happened. I do not have the final say on what actually happened. My feelings are solely my own, and only because they are mine, and that my partner didn't make me feel this way. If you approach your partner in that manner, you're already going to be leaps and bounds ahead in your probability of being successful. If you approach your partner in the other way, which is, you made me feel this way, and it's because of you that this is happening, and really, I'm really angry at you, or you're really a jerk, I'm just not going to say it, right, out loud, or this is all your fault, or you should be different, or you're wrong, and you misunderstood the situation, or you don't understand what's going on. If you utilize that mindset And never mind if you use that language, I'm just talking about that mindset. Your communication is completely doomed right from the start. You're not going to get anywhere with communicating to your partner. Okay, so I'm just going to say that again succinctly. Mindset is the number one factor for successful communication. If you own your feelings and you understand that you are responsible for your own feelings, and we'll get into this, and you understand that your experience of what happened during that event that you want to now talk to about your partner is merely your own experience, and it's not necessarily her experience, or it's not necessarily the truth of the experience. It's just what you saw and how you understood it. So you're owning everything. You will have a much, much easier time talking about what happened to your partner than if you walk into the situation thinking or feeling, or even, or for sure showing that really your feelings are as a result of your partner's behavior, and your feelings are their fault, and they did something wrong, they did something inappropriate, and that your understanding of the situation is the truthful understanding of the situation, that's going to set you up for major communication disaster. Okay? So I know that that's a very challenging place to be, because most of the time when we approach our partner, we honestly believe that it's their fault and that they did make me feel this way and that they did do something wrong, right? That's usually, like, you get hot under the collar, you're upset about something, you find faults in something they did, and you want to just blurt it out and say, hey, how could you do this? What were you thinking? You know, how could you be so stupid? Right? But that type of communication always ends, unless you're married to a complete, you know, paper towel, you know, that type of communication is going to be a disaster. Okay. So let's learn how. Does everybody have any questions so far? Does everybody kind of agree with what I'm saying? Does anybody want to make a comment or understand?
That's going to be incredibly hard. Just even listening to it is painful.
Yes, of course. I can't hear you. Meryl, I can't hear you, sweetie.
Can I add something?
Yeah, please.
So, yeah, it is very hard, Grace, for sure, for sure. What's interesting, and I talked about this last time in the last class as well, is that if you look at people as, like, we're all kind of energetic systems, and we're all walking nervous systems. And so when we're agitated, or, you know, even when we're relaxed, people can feel that from us. And so if we're in our head and we're agitated and we're angry and we're judgmental, even if we say it in the sweetest voice, it's going to be heard. It could even be heard incongruent, you know, in an incongruent way to the partner. So the best thing to do is that when you do feel charged and triggered and all that kind of stuff, is to kind of, like, I have a somatic process of, like, roar, that I call roar, because it's kind of like, if I'm charged about something, I'm going to do that somatic process before I speak to my husband about something, because I'm going to be in a much different energetic nervous system place when I've kind of, like, released how I felt and my anger and everything else, so that I'm going to express it differently. And so, because communication happens when people feel emotionally safe. Ready. And so we it's important to make ourselves feel emotionally safe, meaning being honest with ourselves about how we feel. And if, whether that's angry or sad or whatever it is, and then processing it for ourselves. And then when we come to our partner, also making them feel emotionally safe so that they can hear us, because our systems will shut down if we feel attacked. So, you know,
that's key, 100%. Yeah, to be in a great state of mind, you know, just physiologically, like you were mentioning, is huge. And that roar process, I've used that with some of my clients as well. It's just fantastic to get people out of that triggered state and into a more homeostatic place where they can actually share how they're feeling. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, hon. Okay, so let's talk about let's talk about how do we go from, you know, poor communication to great communication, right? How do we get there? How do we express our thoughts and feelings in a way that can be heard? Okay, so the method that I came up with is called relationship-oriented communication, ROC. And the purpose of relationship-oriented communication is to really express your inner reality, right? Your thoughts and your feelings, to share what's going on inside of you personally. That's the purpose of relationship-oriented communication. It's not to second-guess your partner's motivations. It's not to blame them for anything. It is really just the power of authentically sharing your heart, okay? And the reason why we want to share our heart in relationship-oriented communication is because when we share almost anything else, it's fodder for fighting. Okay, I just had a story of a couple that I was working with where they were passing by his father-in-law's home and he wanted to stop in. And well, it's a little bit complicated, but he was passing by a friend's house and his wife said to him, well, this person's not really a good friend. So, and she had her reasons, and there's nothing wrong with her saying that, you know, she had nothing, she could have been right. It doesn't make a difference. But the man felt that that this person, his friend, was a good friend, right? And they started arguing about whether he's a good friend or not a good friend, and what the definition of a good friend is versus not a good friend. And next thing you know, an argument ensued and they're fighting. Right. So when he came to me and he shared with me what had happened, he said that this has been an ongoing conversation. So I said to him, I said, instead of arguing about the reality of the situation, whether he actually is a good friend or not a good friend, you could just say to your wife, I understand that you don't think he's a good friend, but I feel that he's a good friend to me. Right. Once he says, I feel that he's a good friend to me, not whether he is a good friend to him, he's shifted the whole dynamic. Now it doesn't makes no difference whether or not her criteria for what a good friend has been met or not. The bottom line is that he feels that this person is a good friend, and therefore he's going to treat him like a good friend. And that's the purpose of relationship-oriented communication, which is to share what's in your heart. Because as everybody here knows who've been married, we could argue literally for eternity about who's right and who's wrong and what's truth and what's not truth. Let's just ignore all that and share how we see things from an emotional perspective. Okay? Now, I don't know if anybody had the chance to take a look at the article that I had sent out. Did anybody have a chance to read it? Good. Thanks, Grace. And May, did you and your husband have a chance to take a look at that? Did you too? No, okay, that's okay. No problem. You didn't have a chance to look at it. That's no problem. So we're gonna go over the story in the article real quickly, just so that we can be up to speed in what happened. So the story in the article is a story of, I think her name is Marsha and Doug. Yeah, I believe that's it. I'm just gonna bring it up real quickly. And what happened is that Marsha and Doug are visiting a high school reunion. And they're at the high school reunion and they go to the bar area, the drinking area. And up comes this guy named Bob who starts talking to Doug. And he says to Doug, oh, Doug, you know, we played baseball together and, you know, we were on the same soccer team and you were in my history class. And Doug starts feeling a little embarrassed because he literally has no idea who this person is. But he's so embarrassed about it. So he goes and he starts kind of faking it till he makes it, you know, like you're kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that. And thinking that at some point something's going to trigger in his mind and he's going to all of a sudden remember who this person Bob is. So they're talking, and finally Doug says something that reveals, you know, about 10 minutes of the conversation, that he literally has no idea who this person is. And it's very embarrassing for him. And his wife or his girlfriend, Marcia, starts laughing. And she starts laughing with Bob about how Doug doesn't remember anything and how, you know, Doug's just, you know, some guy, you know, Doug likes to think he remembers everything, but he doesn't. And, you know, that's just the way Doug is, right? So Doug is like humiliated about this, right? Now, Marcia just thinks it's a funny joke. She's not trying to be nasty or mean, but she just thinks it's funny. So her and Bob are kind of laughing at Doug's kind of faux pas. And so the question is, you know, Doug was humiliated and embarrassed and he's upset, right? So did everybody get the scene? Explained it? Cool. So the question is, how does Doug express to Marcia that he's so upset, right? How does he get across this thing? Now, obviously he could just, you know, scream at her right then and there. That's not gonna work, right? But let's take a look at some of the things that he could say. Let's just say he is smart enough to wait till he gets into the car. And when they're in the car together on the way home, he turns to Marcia and he has a lot of different ways that he could start this conversation, right? I mean, obviously the first way, he doesn't have to say anything, right? But let's just assume he's going to communicate. So how would he communicate? So let's go from what's called really bad communication to just okay, all right? So really bad would be, actually, why doesn't somebody volunteer? What would be a really bad thing for him to say? Grace, you could give me a suggestion.
Really bad would be like, how could you do that to me?
Right, that would be really bad. Yeah. And May, what would you say would be really bad?
Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I've never used this before.
You're doing great.
I would say maybe being like, what's wrong with you? Why would you do that?
Mm-hmm. Good. Excellent. Great. So I'm going to take it one step even worse, right? So those things are all very good ways to have pretty poor communication, because there's a lot of blame implicit in that statement and a lot of anger coming out of your mouth, you know, your face when you say it. But how about if you were to say something really bad, like, Marcia, you are just so rude, right? That would be pretty bad, right? Because it's bad because now he's calling her a name. Right, he's implying that he's saying straightforward that you're a rude person, right? I wouldn't blame him for saying that personally, but that wouldn't be an effective way to communicate to your spouse. Now, if he wants to take it not so bad, but still pretty bad, he could say, Marcia, I think you are rude. So he's not saying it's a statement of fact. He's just saying, I think that you're rude. You might not be rude, but I think that you're rude. Right, so that's a little bit better, right? Would everybody agree that's a little bit good? He can make it a little bit better, right? Which is, Marcia, I think your behavior was horrible, right? Or you behaved horribly, right? So now he's not saying that she's rude. Now he's not even saying that he thinks that she's rude. But even if he said, I think you behaved rude, he's removing it from her as a person and saying just your behavior is rude. And then the fourth way that he could say this, which would be on the scale of pretty good, but still just okay, would be, Marcia, I experienced your behavior as rude, which he's saying, he's not even saying that her behavior was rude. He's saying that the way I experienced that, it felt really rude to me. Okay. I would think the guy's a pretty great guy if he could come up with that one. If that had happened to me, I don't know what I would lose it. You know, but let's just say
it has happened to you. How many times can we count?
Right. So
we've had practice over the years and training.
So he could say, Marcia, I experienced your behavior. So this is going from really bad to just okay, right? Because what's the just okay part? He's removing the criticism from her directly. And at the end, as you can see, there's four different levels of removal. But at the end, ultimately, what he's saying is taking responsibility for his own feelings by saying, I'm not saying you're rude. I'm saying that I experienced that situation or that behavior as rude. Good. All right. This is pretty good. We're going from really bad to just okay. But that's not what we're here. That wasn't the big reason why you signed up. We don't want a just okay behavior, communication. We want great communication. Okay. Okay, so here we go. Everyone got their seatbelts on? This is going to be really exciting. Okay, don't forget, the crux of good communication is taking complete ownership of two things, your emotional experience and your lived experience, those two things, okay? Your emotional experience is, I own how I feel. It is not your fault for how I feel. Right? Even though it's crystal clear that it was totally her fault for how he felt. But I'm not talking about that. I'm saying communication. If you want to communicate, okay, I own my feelings. Okay, number one. Number two, my lived experience, what I saw, is my own interpretation of what I saw. It is not reality. Marsha could have been laughing at another joke that somebody told her earlier on. It didn't look like that to me, but I can't tell you how many couples I've counseled where one person comes to me and says, tells me this whole story of something. And then when I hear the side from the other person, it's completely different, almost unrecognizable. So what I experience is my interpretation of what I saw. It is not necessarily God's truth on this earth. You have to have that in your mind. If you have those two things, I am responsible for my own feelings. It's not the other person's fault. And what I saw is only my lived experience. It may have been different. Okay? Okay, good. Once we have those two things in mind, right, now we can craft some very powerful and acceptable and beautiful statements. It's really easy, right? But we have to have the right mindset to express ourselves wonderfully. Okay, here we go. There's four parts to it, and I'll just say what those four parts. There's something called a goodwill statement, an expression of lived experience, a expression of my emotional reaction, and then a change request. Okay, and we'll get into all four, and this won't take long, and it's really easy. It's simple, I should say. It's not easy, it's simple. Let's focus on the middle two, because those are the most important things we just said before. Lived experience and emotional reaction, okay? Because those are the two things that we have to take responsibility for. Here we go. Lived experience. A lived experience is what I saw. It is not my judgment of what they did. It is not my implication of what they did. It is not a discussion of the motivations behind what they did. It is just what I saw. Marsha, when you and Bob were laughing at my forgetfulness, right? Can everybody agree that that's actually what actually happened? Yeah. When you and Bob were laughing at my forgetfulness, then we add the emotional reaction. I felt humiliated. Okay, pretty simple. Does that statement assign any blame to Marsha?
No.
I didn't blame Marsha for that. Does that imply any motivation behind what happened and why she did it? No. I'm just stating what I saw, what I experienced. I experienced Bob and Marsha laughing at my forgetfulness. I felt humiliated. Okay. Now, Marsha could react to that any way she wants. She can be whatever type of person that she is, and she may go into defensiveness. But technically, if she tries to throw defensiveness at me, I can just keep countering with the simple statement, I'm not blaming you. I'm not saying you did it because you're a mean person. You're a great person. I know you meant no harm. I'm just letting you know that when you and Bob were laughing at me, this is how I felt. Okay. Pretty easy so far, right? Now, yes, Grace.
Well, how do we know is by saying you were laughing at me, is that an accusation?
There is an implicit relationship that I'm drawing between her laughing and at my forgetfulness. Yes, there is that implicit turn. But you're going to see in a second how she could challenge that, no problem. Okay, that's a good point, and you're gonna see how this works. Okay, now we start off. That's just those two points are the core. So my lived experience and my emotional reaction, where I'm owning everything. Okay, we're gonna dress this up to make it nice. How are we gonna dress it up? We're gonna start. Number one is the goodwill statement. A goodwill statement lets your partner know that you love them, you trust them, you're not accusing them, you would never think that they would do anything to harm you. You know they didn't mean it. So for instance, Marcia, I am confident that you meant no harm. When you and Bob were laughing at my forgetfulness, I felt humiliated. Okay, can you feel the tension just completely escaping the room at this point? Right? Because he's letting her know that he is not accusing her of anything. He's not blaming her of anything. And he's not even looking at her. He's just trying to share that this is what was going on for him when he had this experience with her. Okay? And he's already shared with her a goodwill. Right? I know you meant no harm. I love you very much. You're a great wife. I know you wouldn't do anything to hurt me. This isn't about that. You should just know that when I saw you laughing with Bob at the fact that I forgot, that humiliated me. I felt humiliated. Okay. Now, if you're Marcia and you're a sensitive woman and you hear this, you might come up with some things. Oh, I didn't mean to, or it was just a joke or whatever. Even if you just say it was just a joke, right? He could just say, I'm sure you were joking. I don't doubt that you were joking, but you should just know that that joke humiliated me, right? And that leads Marcia into saying the most obvious thing, which is, wow, I'm really sorry. I certainly didn't mean to humiliate you. I thought I was just being funny. Right? Because what else is she going to say? I mean, she could try to say a few other things, but unless she's being really obstinate, he's not even blaming her for anything. He's just saying, and he could even admit that if it was somebody else that heard them laughing, they may think it's funny. It could be that if Steve was next to them and Bob and Marcia were laughing, maybe Steve thinks that's funny. That's fine. But when I'm your partner, your lover, your husband, your mate, when I experienced that, this is how it affected me. And I know that you meant no harm, okay? So good, so now we've got one, two, and three. The goodwill, the lived experience, the emotional reaction. And then the fourth one is a change request, right? Which is really the crux of what we're trying to accomplish here, because ultimately, you know, getting an apology from Marcia is nice, but what Bob really wants, what Doug really wants is that it doesn't happen again. Really, that's really where he's going with this whole thing. So the change request would be, Marcia, I'm confident that you meant no harm. However, I want you to know that when you and Bob were laughing at my forgetfulness, I felt humiliated. I'd appreciate it if you would try to never laugh at me when we were out together. Is this something that you can do? Right? No big deal. Pretty straightforward. She could try. Right? And it may happen again, in which case he'd have to bring this up again. Right? But he's expressed to her in a very, instead of them, I'm sure that everybody who's on this call can easily imagine that if he were to express this differently, she would react violently against him, get very angry that he would accuse her of such a thing, argue with him about why this really wasn't, why is he being so sensitive? And then who knows what would happen in the future if she did it again. right? So we want to wrap these requests and these statements very delicately. And the easiest way to do that, again, is to take full responsibility for your feelings, no blame, and understand that your experience was just your experience. And of course, the goodwill statement is huge. And the behavior change request is always something that you have the option of adding. Grace, if your husband were to ask you something like this, right, would you be more open to responding with compassion?
Yes. Most definitely. As a matter of fact, I have some relationships with certain people, for example, my sister-in-law, who actually speaks like this. She's an amazing communicator.
Wow.
And so I personally firsthand experience what that's like. And it's just amazing how transforming it is on my end. I end up, if something happens, and it's interesting because I see her do that with other relationships as well. And it just makes me, first of all, it just makes me more apologetic. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. She just brings the conversation together, right, toward each other. You know, that moving toward.
Yeah.
She does that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I feel like this kind of conversation kind of brings the two people closer together. And the other person wants to, like, they actually hear it. But I do have some few points later on.
Okay.
That I have trouble with.
Okay.
You know, okay. For example, like when you explain, when you show your emotion, I feel like I'm almost blaming. I can't differentiate when I experience something between what I experience versus what I feel like I'm maybe blaming. I don't always know the difference. So then when I say that and I get that kind of negative response, only then do I realize I was blaming.
Right.
Perhaps I was never taught how to communicate well. So I don't know the tools. I don't know the building blocks.
Yeah.
So I don't even know that I am doing what I'm doing.
Sure. Yeah. Most couples that I speak with, when, especially with the women, when they come to me and they say, well, I'm just trying to share my feelings, or I'm just trying to say what happened, or I'm just trying to fix the situation. And he gets so upset and he walks out of the room.
And you're like, what happened?
That's usually I know exactly what happened, but the women don't know what happened. That's usually the situation. I almost always know exactly. I say to myself, the first thing that goes off in my head is, oh boy, I'd love to be a fly in that room. but this is really a powerful way, you know, of trying to, and I'm glad that you brought up that example of your friend that does this and how life-changing it was, or communication changing it is for you. And like you said, it brings people towards each other, right? Because technically, and not just theoretically, but practically, we all want to make our spouses happy, right? So if my spouse had a problem with me, then theoretically, I want to appease her issue and to make her happy, right? And so I have to work on myself to, you know, I have my own struggles with hearing, you know, criticism and things that I interpret as controlling and stuff like that, for sure. But, you know, again, if my spouse is, when my spouse is able to say things in a more non-blaming way, what I hear is blaming, you know, and everybody's spouse is different. So I may have to say it this way, and Grace, you may have to say it that way, right? But the goal here is to create a way where we can express what's in our heart, because no one can argue with what's in your heart. No one can say you shouldn't be humiliated. When I'm laughing at you in public, you shouldn't have felt humiliated. That's not even an argument. I can just say, I can even answer to that, you might be right. Maybe I shouldn't feel humiliated, but you know what? I do. Right? So there's literally no argument here. And if she says, well, that's not my fault, you could just say, I never said it was your fault. I'm just letting you know that when X, Y, and Z happens, my reaction is A, B, and C. right? So that's all I'm saying. When X, Y, and Z happens, it could be anything. When you show up late for dinner, my reaction is feeling rejected and ignored. I'm not blaming you. I know that you work late at work and that there's no blaming. I just want you to know that when this happens, this is the way I feel. Pretty simple, right?
Well, okay, so let's say that we do really work hard to be great. We try. And we preface by saying, I don't mean to blame. But what if the other person responds as if they do feel blame? And then the conversation goes downhill already.
Well, let me ask you a question.
How do we know if that's truly blaming?
Well, your partner may think that you're blaming them, right? And that's okay. Your partner can feel that way. The point is that, and I found this to be true, and not only that, but I've also found that that I've studied this as well, that when you communicate something to your partner, no matter what the reaction, they hear you. I know it sounds a little crazy and it's not intuitive, but if I say something to my wife and I say it inappropriately and she gets defensive, one thing I know at the end of the argument is for sure, or the end of the conversation, is that she heard what I said. We may walk our separate ways. We both may need cool down periods. We both may need some time out or whatever it is. But the bottom line is that she actually, because she cares about me, she loves me, and she doesn't want to hurt me or bother me or humiliate me. So you're not going to necessarily get perfection the first time. It doesn't always go according to script. The main thing is for you, Grace, to feel that you're not blaming him, because you're not. You own your feelings. What does it mean to own your feelings? That means that if somebody else was standing at that waterfall, at that water spout, whatever, and this happened to them, maybe they wouldn't have been humiliated. Your partner didn't do something humiliating. It's just that I experienced that. I felt humiliated. Hmm. And as long as you're clear on that, and that's the way you come across, it's only a matter of maybe not the first time, maybe not the second time, maybe not the third time, but at some point they're going to realize that you're not blaming them, especially when you start off by saying, I know you meant no harm. I'm totally not blaming you for anything. This is my fault, not yours. This is my responsibility. I don't know why I feel humiliated when you laugh at me in public. Now that's absurd because everybody does know, but if you said that, you're completely owning your experience.
But you're also, David, I thought that you don't start out with saying, like, I'm not blaming you. I thought you start off kind of like with a sandwich of like, I know you love me and care about me, and I know you meant no harm, which 100%. Is kind of like a soft landing kind of thing. So you're not even saying, I'm not blaming you.
Right.
You're just saying, you know, I know you love and care about me and see it all the time. And you probably meant no harm. And this is what I saw, and this is what I experienced. This is what I feel.
And perfect.
Then, yeah. And I think what happens is, like, the partner, like, even listening to the story, like, I felt shame. Like, wow, if I did that, like, inside, I feel like a little squirmish, a little like, oh my gosh, like, shame. But what also comes out is, I don't want to hurt my partner. And so then it makes me want to own up and say, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know.
Exactly. And it could take time. You know, it might not, it may not be the first time you say it. Hold on one second. Somebody's trying to get in. I think. It may not be the first time you say it. It may not be the second time you say it, but eventually, you know, eventually you will get across to your partner that you are just trying to express what happened without blame. But again, everybody, myself included, I'm speaking to myself. That's one thing I love about these classes. I get to speak to myself again. It's all about the mindset. If you walk in thinking to yourself, my husband's a jerk, I can't believe he did this, or my wife is so insensitive, or if that's how you're walking it, that's going to come across 100% of the time. And I love what Miriam Ruffel said, my wife, when she talks about the ROAR process, which is that it helps women and men, but she really works with women, get through some of that emotional angst before they, you know, might want to bring up a subject. Okay. So I just want to say that, you know, Grace, if you want to come up with an example for you, maybe something that happened recently in your life that you want to give this a shot, you're welcome to, if you'd like. You don't have to, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but we could tear it down real quickly. And you could try to phrase it in a relationship-oriented communication way.
Ooh. I wish I had thought about that earlier. Sorry.
It's okay.
Maybe while Grace thinks about it, I just wanted to add this. Some people might be thinking like, you know, maybe they've been fighting for a long time with their spouse about things and things aren't so good between them. And they might be thinking, well, really, he doesn't care about me or she doesn't care about me. And she's done stuff like this before, et cetera, et cetera. When we say the statement of like, I know you care about me and that you didn't mean to hurt me, what's kind of cool about that is it's also lifting the other person up to like a higher expectation, a higher state, and a way that not only can they be like that, but you can also see them like that as well, which is kind of cool. So people might be sitting and saying like, oh my gosh, that's not true. Really, he doesn't care about me, or really, she doesn't care about me. She's done this so many times. But with marriage, it's such an interesting playing field because we want to change the dynamics. And sometimes we can do that by believing the best about someone, even if we're not feeling it. That's a great, it's a great way to start out because you're kind of putting them in like a higher place maybe than how you have seen them. So you're showing that you kind of believe in them, you believe in the marriage, and then you're saying it in that way. Then you're bringing your heart in and your feelings. And then obviously you guys got married or are together because you really do care about each other. So it's kind of awakening that love and that care, you know, for each other, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a really good point, Meryl. That's wonderful. Yeah, it may be startling for some spouses to hear that the partner starts off a sentence with, I'm sure you meant no harm. yeah, so that's really great. Okay, well, Grace, I don't want to put you on the spot, so.
I do have a scenario.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, was the scenario supposed to be a situation where it was a bad communication because it was really bad?
We can do that. So you could say, you know, just tell me what happened in, you know, a couple minutes, and then we can see how you could express yourself in a way that would work.
Oh, that'd be great. Okay. So my husband and I worked together.
Okay.
In my practice. And there was a situation, I guess, you know, crazy day, busy, nonstop, me just task, you know, efficiency, getting done. So I'm in that mindset.
Yes.
And I speak to a doctor, a colleague who asked me why I didn't do this for her, which I was supposed to.
Okay.
And then I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. So then I went to my husband because I felt he was supposed to be having taken care of this.
Okay.
And so no filter. And he could totally pick up on my face, my energy, my muscles, my stance, my breathing. Because I said, I don't understand. How could this happen? Right? And it didn't even occur to me that I said it in such a terrible way, because when he responded, I was blown away by his reaction and that I forgot about mine.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's how it usually is many times. Uh-huh. And perhaps Marian, is it? I'm sorry.
Yeah, Miriam.
Miriam, hi, sorry.
Hi.
So I would love to hear your tips on how to get rid of that energy so that I can then set myself up in a better mindset to bring it up. Because yeah. I don't know how to do that when I'm in that frenzy.
Of course.
But that's basically what happens many times. And this is one of those very typical moments where I just went, what do you mean you didn't do this like that? And that says so many horrible things, right?
And we've all been there, Grace. We've all been there.
And then I don't even realize how catastrophic that was until I get this response from my husband that it was catastrophic. And then that's how it ends. And then I don't even get to address my issue because the way it was presented was totally like a tsunami.
Great. Okay. So Miriam's going to have an opportunity to share with you. Before we do that though, let's take that situation just for the benefit of everybody. Let's take that situation and break it down into how we could say it using the relationship-oriented communication way. Okay. And see if it'll come across a little bit differently. Okay. So if I got it right, you and your husband worked together. Something was supposed to have been done. He didn't do it. He should have done it, in your opinion. And you freaked out and basically exploded on him to some extent or another. And you didn't feel like you were exploding on him, but that's what you understood happened based on his reaction to you.
Exactly.
Okay, good. All right. So the first question I have for you, is your husband a responsible worker?
Yes.
Okay.
He's right here, actually.
I know. I saw him there. You did? Yeah, I can see him in the background every once in a while. He's wearing a sort of orange shirt or something. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you appreciate the work that he does for you?
I do.
Okay. So for you to start off with a goodwill statement is not facetious by any stretch of the imagination.
Correct.
Correct. Okay. All right. The lived experience was that something that you thought he was supposed to have done didn't get done. Is that correct?
Okay. Yes.
So basically, you could just say something didn't get done, right? Okay. Your emotion. So this is a tricky part, but we can get to it. What was your feeling about that?
Anger.
Well, I think the first feeling for me was I felt irresponsible for my colleague.
Perfect. I love that. That's great. Because anger, I think May said anger. Is that correct, May? Did you say anger?
Yeah.
Anger is what happens afterwards. Meaning the real feeling underneath it is that you're afraid of losing this client or disappointing this client. You're embarrassed because you didn't show up properly. And you gave it the one that you just said you felt anxious.
Irresponsible.
Irresponsible, right? Good. Those are the real feelings. Anger is what happens afterwards when you've already assigned blame and now you're getting upset at him, right? So we'll leave anger out of that just for a second. So the lived experience, something didn't get done and you felt irresponsible and humiliated and nervous about your client. Good. So how about we just say it as simple as possible? Okay. What's your husband's first name?
Tony.
Tony. Tony. You are such a responsible worker. I know you do everything so well around this office. I'd like you to know that when this wasn't done, I felt really irresponsible and nervous in front of my client. Right? I'm wondering if in the future, if you can't get something done that we discussed or that needs to be done a certain time, if there's any way you could let me know so that I could inform my client and set proper expectations. Right?
Yes. Do I say all of that without hearing his end of the story though?
Yeah, because there is really no if
oh, I see.
What he could easily say is okay or I'm sorry or that makes sense or I didn't know or I can't believe I forgot or you're right or I didn't know I was supposed to do that. In which case that's good feedback for you. Oh, you were unaware that you were supposed to do that. So obviously we have to fix up our communication, you know, whatever procedures we have in the office, or we could, you know, there's tons of really gold feedback that can come from that once you say it in a way that's non-confrontational. That's when the real communication actually begins. Oh, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I didn't know that would hurt you. Like back to the Marsha and Doug oh yeah, I'm very sensitive about being laughed at when I was a kid. You know, this happened to me. I saw my mom do this to my dad. I'm just like super trigger happy, when you're trigger crazy when that happens. Then you really get to know each other and you can share real things. So in your situation with Tony, he may be thinking to himself, oh, it's just a report, you know, the doctor calls, you don't get it, you got 10 minutes to go, you know, this is what I normally do. But now he's finding out something about you, that you're the type of person that feels really irresponsible when you're unprepared, right? So he'll have that in mind. Like, it took me years to figure out that my wife was a much more practical, a much more, you know, very, very organized and methodical person than me, you know, and we had lots of disconnect in the beginning of our marriage, because I'm just like a fly by the seat of your pants kind of guy, you know, and we would argue and fight, and I would never really hear that from her. I would just hear that she's upset at me about something, you know. We never got to the core of who we are as people. And this type of communication opens up that channel where there's no blame. You're just saying to him, when this was supposed to be done, or when I thought this was supposed to be done and it wasn't, I felt this, right? With all that goodwill before and a behavioral change request. And so let me hear you say that.
From the beginning?
Yeah, just, it's four statements: behavior, goodwill, lived experience, okay, emotional reaction, and a change request. Not that.
You know. Okay. So I would say, honey, I know you're so responsible and you so care about this practice and you want us to do well. And I truly appreciate all that you do.
Perfect.
Like beyond the beyond. But I just felt so humiliated when I found out that I didn't do this for this colleague. And
that's it. That's it. I just, when this wasn't done for the colleague, I felt humiliated. You should just know that I felt humiliated. I felt nervous, right? I felt, what was the other word? Irresponsible.
Right. So okay. Do I go on? Oh.
You could if so you want to.
That was my reaction, right?
That was your lived experience.
That was my lived experience.
And your reaction.
Okay. So the lived experience is
this what wasn't happened. Done. Yeah, this okay. wasn't done.
Okay. So then the change.
Yeah, request. If you want, you can ask a change request. You might not need to. Your husband seems like the kind of guy that he'll get it without you making a request change, right? He understands yes. that, you know, you don't necessarily need to tell him, get your work done on time, right? Yes. But if you feel like you need to say that, the less you say, the better, right?
Okay, so that's interesting that you don't always have to have a change request.
No.
Okay.
Some things are obvious, right? You don't have to. Sometimes the change request can just be digging it in. So I'm asking you that the next time I ask you to do something, you do it right away. I mean, that's not, that kind of undermines the whole energy of what you're trying to say.
Yes.
Right. You should just, yes. you could just let him know. I'm feeling really anxious or nervous right now because, you know, when I know how responsible you are, but when my client called and it turned out that this wasn't done, I'm feeling very, very stressed out and very irresponsible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to know that because I know that you care about the way I feel and I know how wonderful you treat this practice. And I know we're trying to get along as best as possible, you know, in the current situation. I just want to share with you that when those things happen, I freak out. And it's not your fault, but I just want to let you know that that's what happens to me when these things happen.
Mm-hmm. So now I have done that maybe a couple of times that I can remember.
Okay.
So, and I think you're right. In order for me to have that ability to think and process little bit easier is getting all that trigger out. So then how do I prep myself to that state? How do I get there? How do I get that mindset state as quickly as possible? Because I'm wreaking havoc, right? By feeling that emotion.
Right.
So should I share what I do?
Yes, please. If you wouldn't mind, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, so I developed the ROAR process because as a somatic healer, things are processed in our body. So and you could do shortened versions of it or whatever, but it's basically the R stands for writing and ripping. And that's when, and again, it doesn't have to be on paper, but I love to do it on paper. So let's say my husband does something that I'm not gonna blame him for or whatever, and I have a reaction. So I might go to a private space. It could be the bathroom, it could be my office, whatever it is. And I have paper, like cheap spiral notepads that I keep really everywhere. I keep one by my bed, I keep one in my office, I carry one even in my pocketbook, because I can get triggered anywhere, anytime, just out in the world. Someone could cut you off. Someone could, just things happen, and I know that I get a response. Yes. So I would I just take, one of the pages and I start just, scribbling on there, like really what I think and really what I feel.
He's such a jerk.
I totally blame. I totally do everything. But all it's doing, it's just on paper. I'm scribbling. It's almost like being a 2-year-old having a temper tantrum. And then what I do is I rip it up. And then O is for opening the mouth. So I don't want anything to get stuck in the throat area. So as a somatic healer, our body kind of, we have emotions are energy in motion. So if we have words that are not going to be said or not going to be expressed because you want to keep a relationship or whatever, but you have those words inside your head, inside your heart. So that's why the writing and the ripping is so good. But I also want to give a release to my throat area and to my mouth. So I'll just I usually do a silent scream. Nobody hears me in my office or whatever, but I might do a silent scream like rawr. And then A is for action, where I might feel like just hitting out a little bit or moving my legs. Like I'm activating my fight and flight response, because in that example that my husband gave about the humiliation thing. So, that's very nice that the husband is going to be like, okay, I'm going to express it this way. But he might have felt like running from the scene. He might have felt like, striking out, and that's just a very normal nervous system response. If we're humiliated, if we're ashamed, if we're angry, we want to hit out, we want to run away. That's the fight and flight response. So I'll do that, in my office. I'll have a temper tantrum with my arms, with my legs. I even have a client when, something happens with one of her kids, she'll go into the bathroom and she'll take a towel and she'll just wring the towel, and she's just expressing it out of her body. Mm-hmm. And then there's the R at the beginning, the R at the end, the roar, release. That's when you have the release, because you've just gotten it out of your body. You might hear intuition that tells you how to, how you want to approach your husband about it or partner, or you do it with David's way, but you've kind of had your big energy experience. You've expressed it. You've totally blamed, but you haven't affected the relationship at all, because now you're going to go to him and you're going to say it in the way that my husband said it so beautifully. Then you can say all the parts, but because then it's like after you've had that temper tantrum, then you're kind of, your intelligence kind of comes back online and says, he's really great. Usually this stuff doesn't happen. He might have made a mistake. Who knows? And then you can, then you're calm enough to say it in the way that David said to say it. Mm-hmm. But you've had that, you've let that energy of heat and, annoyance and whatever, just kind of temper tantrum. You had a 2-year-old temper tantrum, yeah. And it didn't break any relationship. It didn't ruin anything. And it was effective for your body because you let that energy kind of run through your body.
Hmm.
So, and I have an e-guide and I can share the link on the chat if you wanted to, because it explains it even a little bit better. But yeah, that's what I do.
That's awesome. So yeah, so how do you know when you're ready? How do you know you've released enough?
I think you'll feel it.
Yeah.
You'll feel it. Right. You'll know. So again, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it could take 5 minutes, sometimes it could take days. No.
I think with the situation that you're talking about, and you said that your husband in general is very responsible, it really could be a minute. Like you could release that in a minute with a quick kind of, you go into the bathroom, a quick, you know, and you can air write if you don't have paper. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that. I'm so embarrassed. And it's like, it's almost like you're acting, and I'm not even an actress, but it's like you're acting it out and you're giving your body just that expression in private. And then you breathe. And then you're like, oh my gosh, he usually doesn't forget those things. I'm really embarrassed by what happened. And then, you know, a minute later you can express to your husband that stuff. If it's deeper issues, if you guys have been fighting for a while, if it's the same issue that's come up, you might need to roar a lot.
I see.
You know, so it all depends on what you're dealing with. But
yeah,
with what you said, and you have a husband who has a reputation for, you know, doing things and all that kind of stuff, it could be a minute.
That's interesting, because, you know, I've always just thought that my idea of decompressing was only through like my best friends who I confide in, or I vent, you know, we have these vent sessions, but your technique, I can do it anywhere, anyhow, and as frequently as I need it.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
And in privacy, and you're not ruining relationships, you're not lowering yourself to a level where you're expressing yourself in an undignified way. You're not hurting anybody, and it's in private. And yeah, it can be done anytime, anywhere. All the, you know, you don't, hopefully you don't have people trigger you all the time, but yeah, yes. Like, if, or if you have, you know, even at that doctor, or that doctor who expressed to you and was angry at you for not showing up in the way that you like to show up, you can roar about that as well. You can have an expression of, wow, that didn't feel good. Rawr. You know, like the whole thing, even towards that person, which again, you're not going to ruin that relationship. So you just do it in private. And I'll share the e-guide link in the chat too.
For sure. I've really seen it work with my wife too. It's really amazing. Like, I've seen that we've had like these interactions where, you know, they've been tense, and, you know, she goes away, and maybe a couple hours later, she's like, jolly go lucky again, you know. And I say to myself, wow, that's new. Like, that's something that wasn't always
new. Doing this for quite a few years, but yeah,
definitely a big improvement from when we first started. And, you know, just to be honest, sometimes I'm still, you know, men actually react emotionally very differently. Many men need get what's called emotional flooding, and that happens when we're overwhelmed. Women seem to be able to tolerate emotions much more than men on some level. And when our emotions are, we have a good shield up so that we don't get emotional, but then when something gets under our skin, oftentimes our reaction is much more intense and we get flooded with feelings. And sometimes the only way that we can move away from that is just time. You know, it's just time and maybe some solitude, or we just do our own thing, or we just need time to process. We can't be in the moment with our emotions as well, for the most part, as women do. You know, it's kind of like a fish out of water a little bit. We're just kind of floundering around a little bit, you know. So
that could be, that's like the man cave, I guess, you know, when men retreat to their cave. But again, from just a nervous system perspective, if a man feels attacked, or, you know, again, his fight and flight, you know, might be activated. And so he might have to flee to his cave to process. He's not going to fight with his wife, you know, something like that. So it's like, again, we're all walking nervous systems, and David's technique of communication is wonderful, because the nerve, it really does calm down the nervous systems. It doesn't shame anyone, and it just kind of brings caring and sharing, which is very beautiful. And then Grace, as you said, like, you can use the roar process, because if you're not in that state, even to start it or express it, then you can get there, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. Annabelle, did you have any questions?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. That was very helpful and informative. I don't have questions at this moment.
Okay. Did you guys want to share? Annabelle, what's your husband's name?
Oh, his name is Josh.
Oh, hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for coming. Did you, Josh, did you two have anything that you wanted to you know, any issue that maybe we could reframe or rephrase for you two? Or was there something that, even a generic thing that maybe you want help with kind of utilizing an easier way of communicating? Would that be helpful for you right now, or you're good just kind of hanging out?
I was trying to think of something, but...
But your wife is in the room.
That's exactly right.
You'll have to call them in privately.
I don't want to seem petty in front of a group.
Yeah, okay. I mean, literally, it could be anything. It could be, you know, who didn't take out the dog, or, you know, it could literally be anything, you know, because as we know, as married couples, we could literally fight about anything.
David, I wanted to share something that okay. I've been trying to train David with. it's a certain question that can also, I know, can help bring down the tension a little bit, but it is... sometimes like we're in the middle of something, a lot of times it has to do with the kids or like some kind of subject that brings up fear in me. And I'll get into controlling energy, or I'll get anxious. And then I've tried to like train him that if he notices that about me, to ask me a certain question. But I've also kind of trained myself that if I can notice that my anxiety is rising, to say to him, what's the question? And then the question is, what are you afraid of? That sometimes when my nervous system gets activated, or and anxiety is a type of fear or whatever, when he says to me, what are you afraid of? Then we stop fighting about, you know, what's the right thing, or what's he thinking, what's I'm thinking. We drop out of that. And he just says, what are you afraid of? And then I can just share my feelings that way. So that's also like something that's helpful with married couples too. And probably a wife could say that to a husband. I don't usually have to say it to David, but I know for myself, it's kind of like, you know, we're going throughout our day. We've all have a lot of stresses in our life. And a lot of times there's fear, whether it's a money fear, or I have like kids and I've got stuff going on there. And the minute he says that to me, what are you afraid of? Or the minute I say to him, hey, ask me the question, and then he says, what are you afraid of? We've already dropped out of the battle zone, and we've dropped into caring and sharing about each other. And then I get to just go, oh my gosh, this is what I'm afraid of. This is what's happening inside me. And so it's just a powerful question. And it can, again, just die down the nervous system, and you kind of stop with the fight and flight, and you just kind of connect on that heart level. So just wanted to share that.
That's great. I love that you started doing that. It was terrific. I got to get better at, you know, noticing it, because, you know, my experience of you is that, uh-oh, here comes, you know.
The tidal wave of, don't do that, do it this way, why are you doing that? Oh my gosh, this is what it means. And, you
know. It's all your fault.
Yeah.
And it's true. Yes, Annabelle, yes?
I remember something. About David, you said earlier, it's important to recognize my emotional experience, and it's different from my lived experience. And I guess in the heat of the moment, I can't differentiate the two. And even though I've been working on that, it's like, you know, taking a full ownership of my feelings. No one else can make me feel this way, but I can't help but wonder a lot of the times I am feeling this way because of this shitty thing that happened. <You know? laughs> I consider it shitty, you know. So one question that I have is that, you know, one thing that I do is that, to remind myself, Annabelle, like, this is your experience right now, and it might be Josh, it might be someone else, they probably have a totally different experience. But then that, I guess I'm trying to exercise empathy here, or it's one of the ways to kind of like put myself or like zoom out of my own experience by thinking that, but, and I can relate to what Grace was saying earlier, is that sometimes that doesn't change how I feel as fast as I would like it to change. And so how do I, what else can I do is my question.
These are good questions. I want to just make a clarification, because this is a really important point. I don't advocate at all for us not totally feeling what we're actually feeling. And I don't advocate at all for us not connecting the dots, okay? What I'm trying to say is that when we take ownership of our feelings, and we take ownership of our lived experience, what we're including is that my lived experience isn't truth. It's just the way I experienced it. That shift alone is huge, and your partner will feel that shift. So in the case back with Doug and Marsha, Doug's upset because Marsha was laughing at him, right? That's what happened. He got upset because she laughed at him. Okay. Owning his lived experience is that he's not implying that he saw her laughing at him. If she would have said to him, "I wasn't laughing at you, I was actually talking to somebody else," which in this case, in this example, didn't seem likely, but there's plenty of examples, I'm sure, as married couples over the years, you've had that situation, right? Okay. Once you leave open that possibility, what you're basically saying is that I'm only talking about the way I think I saw it, not the way you think you saw it, or not the way it actually is. I'm just saying this is what happened to me. Okay. So this really shitty thing, to use your words, is what happened to me. Right. And this really shitty thing that happened to me made me feel really angry. Right. Now, how do you own you just own the lived experience. Now, how do we own our feelings? What we're saying, when you own your feelings, what you're saying is that it might not have made somebody else feel angry. Anger is not necessarily the only possible reaction. Mm-hmm. If I did the same thing to you, you may have thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm owning my experience, saying that this is the way I experienced it. And it's not your fault, because you may have thought that this was a funny thing and that I would have experienced something different. I would have experienced this differently. So I'm feeling this way because of what happened. That's true. I'm not trying to disassociate those two things. That's living in fantasy land, right? And I don't agree to live in fantasy land in this particular area of my life. There are other areas of life that I do live in fantasy land, but not in this one. So owning your own experience means this is just the way I saw it. I don't have the final say in what actually happened. Owning your emotions means this is just the crazy way that I react. It might not be for everybody. It's not your fault that I'm reacting this way. This is just the way I react. Okay, when you kind of hone in on that, everything stems from that root. The whole tree grows out of there. And this will be the way it is with so many other things in life. And this has brought me a lot of personal freedom. You know, if I'm upset at something that happened at work, if I'm upset at something that happened with my kids, if I'm upset at happening just circumstance, right? I say to myself, not everybody would react this way. I have friends who think this is funny. Right. And then I'm free. It breaks me out of my thing. Oh my gosh, like this is the only way that I could see this. And this is all this person's fault. And this person is a total jerk. Mm. Right. Did that help a little bit in decoupling those things?
Yes. Yes. Especially the part where this happened, and the emphasis on I can't control what other people do or say or react to my reaction is, yeah, because I think sometimes the anger lasts longer than I want it to, because I felt like I didn't have a final say, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's like there's like a, it's a very multifaceted,
oh yeah,
experience, don't have a final say, shame, judging myself, why didn't I stand up for myself?
Sure.
You know, or like, what, all the while trying to figure out what do I really need in this moment, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's Annabelle, I'm sorry. You can use the ROAR process, because really it goes beyond relationships. It goes just with everything. And what's so nice about it is again, it drops you into your own body, you into your own experience. And you get to express whatever you want. You're just scribbling it on paper. And that's when you can actually hear, when you have that verbal release and you have that energetic release in your body, you might hear intuition about how to handle the situation, and besides David's techniques as well. But the point is that, you know, you're not ignoring your experience. You're not trying to justify. You're not staying in your head. You're dropping into your body. You're having a full body experience, so that it's very healthy for the body. And it's taking you out of your mind of trying to figure things out. And it can lead to completion, especially if you're going to then express to someone something. Church. But even if you can't, if it's a marriage situation and it will, because you'll be able to play out the whole thing, but you didn't squash anything or ignore or suppress or anything. You've let it all be released. But he didn't get hurt in the process. You didn't ruin the relationship. You're not in a fight for 5 days because you've roared it out, you know? And then you've owned your own experience. So that's important, especially for women to do that.
Especially for women.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No, because we'll tend to blame, shame, judge negatively ourselves, all that kind of stuff. You don't have to do that with the ROAR. You can totally blame, shame other people. It doesn't matter. No one's, it's perfect. You know, it's perfect. It's immature. It's like, just great. You know, just be a 2-year-old.
Right. So true.
It's not permission.
Right? Yeah.
I feel like it gives you permission.
Yeah, it gives you permission to be human.
Yeah.
So I just want to say hi to Jolanda, who's up there. Hi, Jolanda. Did you want to share anything? I don't think I can hear you. Oh, hi.
So my personal situation has been similar to all of you ladies who've shared. I am kind of realizing that I'm more of a react first off the emotion. So if I'm angry, I'm just, why did you do that? You did this. And sometimes it feels intentional. And it's kind of when I get my feelings wrapped around feeling like they did that on purpose or they didn't take good care of my feelings, then I start to kind of just react. But then that creates a whole like back and forth, and now he wants to defend himself because he felt attacked, and then now I feel attacked, and it's just kind of
right
senseless arguing for minutes, hours for no good reason, and then we kind of go off into our spaces, and it's kind of a lot to kind of process our own emotions, process the, you know, the projections. But I really like the ROAR technique. I need the expression. I have a couple of times just gone in my room and just, you know, just kind of just gave out a silent little expression. But stopping to kind of take responsibility, accountability, and for my own emotions is something that I know I need to work on. And the goodwill, what you were saying, the first thing, I know that, you know, you are sensitive, you are, you acknowledge my feelings, I know that you understand me, and maybe this wasn't on purpose. I know that I have to kind of work on that, because once I feel wrong, it's like, why did you do that to me? You knew that I did not like that, and you did it anyway. So you just don't care about anything. And so it's just so dramatic. And it's like, he doesn't even know how to kind of like
respond to
me. And so then now he's holding on to his emotions, and that's causing tension and resentment for no good reason.
Yeah. Wow, that was very powerful. So, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So, Jolanda, just get like some spiral notepads. Just get them, carry them around, have them in your bedroom or wherever. And then the minute you get pissed off or triggered, you just take out your spiral notebook, go into the bathroom and go,
I can do that. So some of these things that you're mentioning, I have done before, but not on a consistent basis and not when I feel that I should be implementing those things like the most. Because we are kind of, I just feel like we're in this space where we're always feeling like we have to defend ourselves against each other, even though we're both saying the same thing. Right. So I'll say something, you know, this argument, and then the next time he'll say, well, I felt the same way you felt the last time. And so now it's these,
right,
you know, trying to figure out whose feelings are more valid, who should apologize. It's just a lot.
Right.
And right. I know that we kind of need to kind of work on our communication, because it's causing a huge wedge, you know, between us. We can't really focus on the things we like to do together, the positive, because we're so kind of upset about the argument that happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And we didn't really get our emotions out. We didn't even get to the part where we wanted a behavioral change. We couldn't even get to that because we're stuck on the emotional reaction.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's 100% true, Jolanda. It's interesting. I always like to say that the majority of people that come see me as a marriage therapist are two people that are actually madly in love. And it's like, I find that to be the oddest idea. I rarely get seen by a couple where one person doesn't actually like the other person. Like, that never happens. It's always two people that really love each other and want it to work out and are just tripping up over what I would consider silly, you know, difficult, but in the scheme of things, silly things, you know? And like what you just said a second ago, you know, you both, if you could calm the energy down in the room, right? And you could peel back all the defensiveness, I'm sure that you would love to hear what it is that your husband or your boyfriend, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not married.
Okay, so
we're working on it early.
Okay. I'm sure you would love to hear what your boyfriend has to say about his feelings.
Okay.
For sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm sure that if he could remove the defensiveness from his demeanor and from you, he would love to hear and satisfy you in terms of pleasing you, in terms of your feelings. Because no one wants to hurt any, nobody ever wants to hurt the other person.
Right.
Well, Grace's example that she gave before, I don't know if you were on the call, but of how her husband didn't get something done in time.
Yeah.
I'm sure her husband actually wants to get that thing done in time. He cares about his wife. He wants to get it done on time. And yet when she communicates with him, it ends up being the last thing in the world that he ends up wanting to do because he's so upset at the way she said it.
Right.
So what I like to keep in mind, especially with the goodwill statements, and that's something that I did with Grace when I asked her originally, I said, is your husband a responsible person? Yes, he is. Does your husband work well in the office? Yes, he does. Does your husband care about doing things professionally? Yes, he does. These are all truths for her. So even though in that moment, just like you said, you're convinced that he did this on purpose, if I were to step you back and say, does your boyfriend love you?
Yes.
Does your boyfriend want to hurt you?
No.
No.
I don't feel that all the time. But no.
No. Does your boyfriend care about your feelings?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, and those are truths, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the goodwill statement isn't a statement of make-believe. It's a statement of fact, even though you're not feeling it right now. Right. And that's the point of the goodwill statement. You're saying, I know who you really are, even though you didn't show up like that this very second.
Where is he?
Yeah, exactly. But that's what you're basically saying. You're not saying that right now you're like that. You're saying that this is who I really think you are. So don't be upset about what's about to come out of my mouth, because I'm not impugning your character. I'm just having an emotional reaction to what just occurred this very second.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
Okay, these are great I'm writing them all down.
Actually, and I put in that email that I sent everybody the link to this article that I wrote. Mm-hmm, it's basically the entire lesson that we had today, outside of my wife's beautiful contributions. But it is 8:37, so I am going to wrap it up, but I just wanted to add
one more thing. Yolanda, when things are going well between you guys, just do gratitudes also, like, because when we have like the appreciations, and it could be a WhatsApp, it could be a love note, it could be something you tape onto the fridge or on the pillow, or even just spoken, like, because you want to build up that goodwill as much as possible, because then he knows he's getting it right a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And then he'll probably also be saying those to you. So then when these things happen, you know, and you go and you temper tantrum it out somewhere else, and then you bring up, you know, the communication, like David shared, you have like a nice cushion, you know, mm-hmm. there's a cushion there. So the appreciations and gratitudes help, like, you know, again, more goodwill, more positivity. And so, it's helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, David.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you everybody for coming. I really appreciate it. And great class. Take care, Annabelle and Josh. Yes. God bless. Say hi to me on Twitter if you haven't said hello to me before. Just anybody can DM me and say hello. I love it when people say hi and I get to meet them online as well as on Zoom. You can find me easiest is just at my website, www.davidfeldman.com. You can sign up for a couples program if you want. That's where Miriam Rochel and I, we go ahead and we work together to work with couples together. And it's about 10 weeks long, and we do a unique program where we don't meet together with the husband and wife or with the boyfriend and girlfriend. We meet individually. So that way, like situations like Josh was saying a little bit earlier, he can feel free to share with me whatever works for him. And Annabelle, you can speak to me, whatever works for you. And I find it very effective in bringing peace and restoring love and intimacy in relationships. And then the women that join that program get to work with Miriam privately. They get 3 sessions in that program with my wife. Sometimes they want more, so they take away them from me and they say, I don't want to speak to you anymore. I want to speak to your wife instead. And I'm okay with that.
And there's also private sessions. So sometimes David will just work with men or women who, you know, don't do the couples program. And, you know, I have my own thing also that I have miriamrochel.com where I work with women privately. So there's all different ways to get more help, or I have a blog, David Blog. So you can just keep feeding yourself like this good information to just bring more peace into your life, more peace into the world, more peace in your relationships. Daka, zaka, avarta bi.